Thank you so much for joining me today on the Cocktie Podcast. I'm your host, Gary. In case you're new to the show, I'm the editor and official timekeeper here at fortnerd.com. It's my utter confusion with daylight savings time that this episode is so late. My sincere apologies. In case you're new to the show, you may know me as the DM for Quest for the Cure, as Cicero on Cyberpunk Independence, as Doc on Scribes and Scrolls, as Dr. Cornelius on Dreadful Tale, yes, it seems I'm typecasting myself, or sailing on the SS Failboat over at Talon and Claw. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to the show or follow us on social media at fortnerd.com. That's at fortnerd, D-O-T-C-O-M, or you could do both. Both works for me, but whatever works for you is fine. I do have a bit of a confession to make. I'm feeling a little overwhelmed personally right now. It's why this episode is late, and to be honest, why I probably won't have too many new episodes in the coming weeks. If you've listened to my show, I've tried to set a standard for interviewing that allows the guests to shine, but also allow them to provide unique insights into their lives and careers. That takes time. Doing the research takes a lot of time, and I take pride in that. So I do need to take a small hiatus. If you've stuck with me to this point, thank you so much, and I look forward to chatting with you all again real soon. Let's talk about the news. In the last few weeks, we got the call of the Netherdeep, but we also got the announcement of Journeys Through the Radiant Citadel, a new book releasing from Wizards on June 21st. The new book is an adventure anthology that follows in the style of Candlekeep Mysteries and Tales from the Yawning Portal. It includes 13 new adventures, 224 pages of content that is set in a variety of wondrous locations and can find a home in any one of your campaigns. What's unique about the book is that for the first time is written by an all BIPOC writing team. Now, hopefully this is the first of many that reflects the incredible talent of our community. I'm quoting here, "This collection features adventures by writers drawing inspiration from their connections to various real-world cultures and mythologies." I am so hyped for that. As you know, I'm a sucker for anthologies to begin with. You may recall I was completely obsessed with Candlekeep Mysteries, and this one perhaps sounds even more exciting. As a former archaeologist, a student of history, seeing cultural analogs in my D&D is a joy, and I am 100% here for these stories. Today I'm chatting with Megan Kenrick. If you've watched stream Dungeons & Dragons, you know Megan as Whittle from Heroes of the Plains, or from Whittle and Rend, from a familiar quest on CNE Games, or so many others, including our Talon and Claw weekend for Jasper's Game Day, and my quest for the Cure. I was so excited to chat with Megan, who's just a joy. I hope you enjoy my chat with Megan Kenrick. Hey Megan, thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I always start with the same question because I'm really curious about this TTRPG journey that we're on. And so what was your first experience with Dungeons and Dragons?
I was sort of a late bloomer when it came to D&D because I did not start until 5e. And the first campaign I was ever in was actually in a Star Wars campaign back in 2016 with some friends. And that was sort of my first taste of D&D. I played a sorcerer, which is apparently one of the most complex classes that you can play. So I had never played D&D before, and I was also playing one of the harder classes. So it was quite a learning curve for myself, but it was a lot of fun. And we actually streamed that campaign. So the whole time I've been learning how to play D&D has been mostly on camera. So I feel like that was a fast track for me to learn all the intricacies and rules of the game, because, you know, you kind of have to.
Yeah.
If you're going to be streaming. So it was a combination of learning D&D and also learning how to stream and role play at the same time. So it was a lot of learning curves going on.
That's actually very parallel to my girlfriend Allie, because she had never played Dungeons and Dragons before. But I'm like, listen, you're delightful. People would love to watch you on a D&D stream. We're going to put you in this D&D stream we're running. She had never played D&D before. So the night before we were scheduled to make the decision, she made me run a short adventure for her and some friends to make sure she liked it. So
yeah, that's smart. And that could be really nerve-wracking, you know, if you're learning on a stream. But I think just being genuine and having fun is the most important thing for yourself and for the viewers too, because they can tell that you're having a good time.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that is completely true. If you're if you're forcing it or you don't want to be there, they can tell.
Yeah, for sure.
Which makes all the streams that you've been a part of all the more impressive, because the chemistry has always been so strong, which I think has driven the success of those streams, because everybody seems to get along.
Yeah, everybody has always been great. And a lot of us were friends before the stream, and that just made it super easy. And you know, once I joined Silver and Steel, Here's the Plains, you know, that group had already been established, and they were also nice and welcoming. And I was actually a fan of Beyond Heroes before I joined that stream. And once they started Silver and Steel, they needed another person. So of course I jumped at the opportunity. So, you know, I was kind of fangirling, but I had to like keep that inside and just like stay professional. So I feel like I really got to learn a lot with, you know, people who I'd been streaming for a long time, and it was a really good influence on myself. Just getting to know them and getting influenced by what they did with their characters, and getting more involved with improv skills and doing different voices, and just becoming more comfortable with doing that on stream. Because I think the first stream I was ever in, I wasn't even really comfortable with doing an accent. Okay. You know, that's something that felt kind of silly to me. It didn't really come naturally. And now I feel like working with these people has taught me a lot about role playing.
Yeah. And it helps that I've been fortunate to be able to interview a number of those, the cast members and the folks who have sort of been in that stream. And they're all such kind and welcoming people. So it feels like to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that it would have been sort of an easy transition to step into that world because of that welcoming nature.
Yeah, they're all super, super sweet, super welcoming.
Okay, so we talked about your TTRPG streams, and we're going to talk about a little bit about Heroes of the Plains, for which you won a TTRP GIFs Golden Award for the most badass moment.
Hey, you did do your research. I did.
Yes, I did. Yeah. Well, for that one wasn't even research. That was because I had a clip in the most badass that I was really hoping was going to win too. So,
oh no. Oh.
Yes. Wait, so you beat
me up. Can you tell me about that?
100%. What was it? Sure. So we were running a cyberpunk campaign called Cyberpunk Independence, me and some of my friends. And it was in the last episode where we were storming a base, and we had just bombed an office, but there was six fully armored guards who were coming down the hallway shoulder to shoulder, sort of like stormtroopers. And so I rolled a really high perception, and the storyteller told me that I saw there was a panic door between my friends and the stormtroopers. So what we had a shift in cast, and somebody left because they had gotten an amazing job and so really excited for her. But so awesome. My character turned around and said, you know, if you ever find her, tell her that I never would have stopped looking for her, and then stepped on the other side of the panic doors and shot the lockout, and then started fighting the six of them by himself, sort of off screen.
Aww.
And so that was actually the end of that season, of our first season. So.
Yeah. Six armed guards is a lot, and just getting a success on any check in a situation like that is so memorable. That's super cool.
You know, it was just one of those things where he's like, you know, he had already lost this one person he considered family. So he's like, yeah, I'm just going to go buy them time so they can escape.
Aww,
yeah.
That's awesome.
But now we're going to talk about your moment, because, you know, dropping a time stop on Asmodeus is a pretty memorable badass moment as well. So why don't you take me through that moment, that award-winning moment, sort of how did it come about? What were you thinking, and what was his reaction to it?
Well, I knew that we were going to fight Asmodeus, and I don't know if it's Asmodeus or Asmodeus. I've heard it pronounced in both ways, and I think both ways are correct.
I don't know, honestly.
Asmodeus just feels better to me. So I did so much research before that episode. I mean, like, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, Charlie, where he's got the string connecting the dots. That was me taking a deep dive into a rabbit hole of everything you can do with time stop, actions that would knock you out of it, what I can get away with. And I actually managed to make it work. And I also dropped a Tarrasque on top of Asmodeus at the end of time stop, which is not something I would have thought to do unless I had the scroll of the Tarrasque. And I feel like in any of Todd's games, it's just chaos. I had the scroll of the Tarrasque in my back pocket for like the entire campaign. I didn't really know what to do with it. And this is my moment.
an incredible moment. Well worth the award. I mean, I'm still bitter about it, but it was, doesn't mean your thing wasn't worth it about it. No, I'm just joking. Now I want to ask you, streaming, and as somebody who's played Dungeons and Dragons on streams and off streams, it's similar to playing at home, but not exactly the same. What has been your most memorable moment from streaming, whether it happened to you directly or to one of your castmates while playing it? Obviously your award-winning moment shouldn't count because we talked about it already.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and say my award-winning moment. It was probably pretty memorable.
That's great.
I think, as far as D&D careers go for me, I don't think it gets any better than that. But I think in Silver and Steel, I was still kind of learning etiquette when it comes to streaming. And with that, I was probably a little sillier with especially my intros, because at the beginning of every episode, I would think of a way to like get myself and the group and the viewers kind of engaged with the last episode, whatever happened. It was very theatrical. Those were really fun memories. So I had a homunculus named Sir Biswalot that my team named for me, my group named for me. And Sir Biswalot was actually a squidling. And I have the worm from the labyrinth, if you've ever seen the labyrinth.
Yeah.
And I think I put tape over its eyes to make it look like it's dead, because Freely or B-Dave killed Sir Biswalot so many times. I sort of like created this dead looking worm. And I don't know, turned it into a puppet at the beginning of the stream and kind of telling the story of how, you know, Freely killed this thing over and over again. Silver and Steel was very chaotic.
Yes.
And those, yeah.
Yeah.
Those are good days.
Yeah. I mean, the, you know, Silver and Steel, sort of those D&D Beyond games, a lot of people still have really fond memories of not only just the campaigns, but of your characters. Do you miss playing Sophius? Sophius, did I say that name?
I do. I feel like, is it weird that I feel guilty that my character now, Whittle, is a champion in Idle Champions and Sophius is not? Because Sophius is my girl.
Yeah.
And Sophius is me. Like, she looks like me in real life. And the reason why I kind of departed from that is because I like Sophia's is very quiet. And I needed a character that was a little bit more boisterous than myself. And mm-hmm. Whittle, she, you know, she sort of has this like gravelly New York accent, and Sophia's is like a soft spoken, you know, someone from Eastern Europe. And, Sophia's was, I feel like, my original character. Her artwork was done by Max Dunbar, and there was so much like energy and passion that went into that character. And I really do miss playing her. But I feel like me as a person needs a character that's a little louder and just more obnoxious you know, for live streams, because it's especially when you're like on a Zoom call and it's a group of like five or six people. If you have one person who's a really soft-spoken person, it can be really hard to hear them. And everyone, you know, is polite and no one's trying to talk over anyone. But I think with the lag and having so many people on one stream, it can be really easy to not be heard if you're a very soft-spoken character.
Yeah, my first streamed character, I had sort of the same thing. I had the most obnoxious bard named Flip, and he was a bard, and I would write parody songs while we were playing. It was for Jasper's game day, so I did, people donated, and I think I did a parody of Celine Dion's Titanic song, and then somebody donated $100 to get me to do Backstreet's Back.
Nice.
So I sort of took the same approach to my character. It's like just, you know, loud and obnoxious, but, you know, still charming at the same time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's also fun.
Yeah. I mean, if it's not fun, there's, you know.
Well, then you got to change it up.
Exactly. Okay. So talking about Whittle, where did you get the idea to make Whittle? Because for those listeners who haven't actually seen Whittle, you did it like a full cosplay, and it was like a sort of a steampunk gnome vampire mixed with artificer. Like, there's all kinds of nonsense going on.
She's got a lot going on with her.
Yes.
Yeah. All of it was very intentional. So Whittle started out as a joke, you know, as many do. I went to D&D Beyond and I made the most ridiculous character I could think of, thinking, I'm never going to play this. And then I played Whittle. Todd ran me on a one-on-one shot and I had a blast. I had so much fun with her. I, you know, Sophia's, my previous character, was an artificer, and I still really like that aesthetic. And I feel like that's sort of the way I think in sort of a, like a engineering kind of way. Mm-hmm. And that was the inspiration to that steampunk aesthetic for Whittle. Except she is a wizard now. So she uses her oversized blunderbuss as her spell focus. So she will cast fireball through her blunderbuss, you know, just for effect.
Yeah. I mean, that's, if you have a blunderbuss that can shoot a fireball, why wouldn't you use it?
Right.
Yeah. 100%.
And she's a Dompier because in the very beginning of Heroes of the Plains, in the first episode, she was actually fighting Strahd because she thought Strahd had taken Rend, who is her friend, played by Todd, NPC. So she thought, you know, Strahd is basically the manager of all vampires, even though he had nothing to do with Rend. He didn't know who Rend was, but Whittle thought, okay, you're the head vampire. I'm going to talk to you. And so she, before Heroes of the Plains, has this whole montage where she is loading a catapult with alchemist fire to launch zombies at Castle Ravenloft. The zombies were full of alchemist fire. And then she would catapult them because no one really expects that. Right. So
no, zombies loaded with catapult, with alchemist fire. That's not something you're going to see coming.
No, but I did a fair amount of damage to Castle Ravenloft. Anyways, long story short, the first episode of Heroes of the Plains, I'm in Castle Ravenloft. I get bit by another vampire and I drop through this portal and I meet my friends in Heroes of the Plains. And she decided it was, like, she didn't really fight off the vampire because it took her such a long time to find Rend. She wanted to become immortal so that she could live forever and have all the time in the world to find him. And then she eventually did.
When you're going through that arc, how much of that is pre-planned and how much of it sort of happens in the moment? Like, did you know that you were going to have access to the vampirism? I mean, when you sort of laid out the character about your one shot with Whittle and Rend and looking for immortality to find him, makes makes perfect sense in hindsight, but is that something you knew going into it, or is it something that sort of happened?
No, not at all. She got bit and I thought, well, you know what? I'm not really that mad about it because I kind of needed more time to find Rend anyways. I would say 90% of what happens is totally random and unplanned, but I work it into the story. Like, I totally meant to get bit by a vampire.
Amazing. I mean, if you believe it, the audience will believe it.
Right.
When you're thinking about making a character, and you know, you talked about making Whittle for this one shot and going to D&D Beyond and making the most ridiculous thing possible and then falling in love with it subsequently, do you ever consider, particularly now as you have a lot more experience with TTRPGs, do you think about how the character is going to be received by the audience? Do you just really focus on playing something that's fun and that your fun will sort of extend to the audience, or is it sort of combination of both?
I always focus on what I have fun playing. Because if the audience, I feel like if you're playing something that's not fun, you're probably not going to be as engaged. You know, it might not be as interesting for you. I don't typically think about what's going to be good, you know, for a stream, unless, you know, we're trying to like promote a new class or something, then I might switch that up. But as far as personality traits, I do what feels right, whatever feels fun.
I want to circle back to something you said about Whittle and Idol Champions, because she was recently adapted into digital form in the Idol Champions video game, which is a it is an idol game by Codename Entertainment. If you're not familiar with it, you stack up your characters, you give them loot, and they kill things.
You got it.
How much input did you have supporting the development into the game? And how did that, did they approach you? Did you approach them? Sort of what was the decision? How did that come about?
Yeah. So with Heroes of the Plains, the whole group had their character in Idol Champions. So it kind of made sense for my character to join them. So they did approach me because of that show, so that you could get the whole family in there, which is super cool to see them all in formation together. But I worked really closely with the development team in the design and, you know, how she attacks. Everything from the type of damage she does to what her attacks look like, you know, when she lunges at people to bite them. There was a lot of input with that. And they, you know, they did their own work. They had a lot of liberties when it comes to game design, because they know the game way better than anybody else, obviously. So I leaned on them for that. Like, I think a lot of people were surprised that she was support in Idol Champions, because she is a glass cannon in the stream. But it makes sense because of her abilities in the game, which are still very much tied to her character and her personality. So it's, you know, you're not playing D&D when you're playing Idol Champions. So yeah. I think that's, it was just something people were surprised about.
What were your, obviously you worked through the development of the character in the game, and it went through multiple iterations, I'm sure. But when you were showed more or less the final product, or close to the end, what was your emotional state? Like, how did you feel seeing a character that you created in an actual video game?
It felt really surreal. And I couldn't believe that a character that I created was in a video game. I think I called my parents like a couple days later and told them about it. And my grandma called me on the phone. She's like, wait, did you make the video game? I was like, no, grandma, it's just my character in the video game. So it was really exciting. And it's just super cool to see something that you created immortalized in a game that so many people like to play. And it's also really cool to see people's interpretation of the character. And what they like to utilize her for. There's so many different ways you can use Whittle because she's the first champion that has the speed tag officially.
Mm.
She speeds everything up quite a bit.
And it must be sort of rewarding. I'm putting words in your mouth, I apologize. Is it rewarding to see people interacting with your character in this way and sort of putting a little bit of themselves into it and giving her a bit of a different flair as people are playing it?
Sure. Absolutely. I think it's super cool to see people kind of pick up what she is and add their own little flair to it. I think it's very open to people's preference and how they like to play. And yeah, I think that's really rewarding.
Your new streaming show is called Familiar Quest, and a natural segue, it's produced by Codename Entertainment, the producers of Idol Champions. It's unique because the characters you're all playing, we'll get to that in a second though. Where did the concept of this show come from? Like what was the genesis of this, the concept where you're all sort of playing non-typical characters?
So that was sort of Todd's baby. He wanted to create a show with all familiars, which would tie in nicely with Idol Champions because there are so many familiars in that game. So in A Familiar Quest, I actually play a gnome squidling. Eugenio plays a worm. A mascot.
Okay.
Michelle plays a two-headed death dog, which looks like a golden retriever. And M plays a rat. So it's really silly, but it's so much fun. I'm having a great time with it.
Yeah, I watched a little bit of the first episode, and if I was playing a drinking game in advance of preparing for this interview, I would be completely hammered based on, wait, sorry, I missed it. If I was playing a drinking game based on how many times everybody laughed in the first sort of half hour, I would have been completely hammered and I would have had to reschedule this interview.
People wouldn't absorb what's going on, and you know that it's all chaos anyways.
Yeah, exactly. So tell me about Squiddle. When you were developing this character, because even Squiddle has a bit of a unique backstory connected to Whittle. Mm-hmm. And so who is Squiddle? What are they? Where do they come from?
So gnome squidlings were originally sketched by Richard Witters and Max Dunbar on Twitter based on a conversation that they, Todd and I, were having about like cute little mind flayers. And I created this sketch of like a gnome flayer that was walking on its tentacles. And then Richard Witters took it and did a way better job than I ever could and just created something truly horrifying. And then it became an actual thing in a book. So Squiddle came about because there's some artwork of Whittle as Lord of Barovia. And she has two gnome squidlings on either side of her, you know, from the actual drawing of Strahd with the gargoyles.
Right.
So one of those is the gnome squidling.
Okay.
I don't really have the story totally hashed out yet, but I know that Whittle has a ton of familiars and they're gnome squidlings, and one of them is Squiddle. And the reason their name is Squiddle is because Whittle kind of essentially turned into this gnome squidling. It has her memories, sort of, but it's kind of losing them because I don't know if you've read the stat block of a gnome squidling, but it's when a gnome gets infected with a worm and it doesn't really like transform all the way. and it kind of loses its memory.
Okay. Okay.
And so story-wise, in a familiar quest, you know, when people ask me questions that Whittle should know, that's why I'm like, oh, I don't really remember. Which kind of works out because this is a new group of people. And I really didn't want Whittle's backstory to be a huge part of a familiar quest. So it's kind of cool just getting to start over with a super silly character.
Yeah, it's a great group, and you seem to have hit the ground running, especially the four. Each character is bringing something separate and wonderful to the game that it's definitely something that people should check out, I think.
Yeah, thank you. I totally biased opinion, but I agree with that.
I mean, yeah, that makes sense. I want to talk to you a little bit about charity, because you've contributed your time extensively over the past couple of years. I know that you've done streams for Jasper's Game Day. Of course, you participated in Quest for the Cure in such a huge way. You're raising awareness and funds for these causes. Why is it important for you to contribute your time in this way? And why do you think that D&D and tabletop role-playing games in general have become such an effective charitable giving engine?
I think because it's such a happy memory for a lot of people, and it's such a fun and great way to give back and to raise money, to bring awareness to people who are affected by tragedy, by illness. And especially for Jasper's Game Day, I feel like that one hits close to home for a lot of people, and it's a really important cause. And it's, you know, it's just a really fun and easy way to contribute to that.
Yeah. And, you know, thank you for being so available and sort of lending your voice to all these causes. And, you know, like you said, Jasper's Game Day is such an important cause for mental health. And, you know, when we're doing stuff like Quest for the Cure, which is for such a rare disease, yes, we raised a lot of money, and not sort of trying to minimize that, but, you know, like if you're raising money for a children's hospital, for example, Everybody knows somebody who's been affected and probably been helped by that children's hospital. Like, you know, I'm a cancer survivor. If I was to ask people that I know for money to cure cancer, I would have an easier time. But because this disease is so rare, you know, it only affects, there's only like 4,000 kids in Canada that have it. And it would be, you know, maybe 40,000 in the States. Just that awareness of what we were doing. So, you know, thank you so much for lending your voice to that, because it really does mean a lot to small causes like this.
Yeah, I think because streams have that high visibility, it is a really great way to bring awareness to that.
Now, I want to talk to you about a project that you have been working on, and that has sort of just come out now. I know you worked on the adaptation for Wild Beyond the Witchlight for the Dungeons and Dragons Adventures League. Why don't you tell me a little bit about that? Because I know it just came out, but you did something a bit different for it.
Yeah, so I was approached for that, I think, because they were super overloaded, and I've helped them in the past for photo shoots. And they knew that I was interested in doing layout work. So they trusted me with this project, and I was, you know, obviously over the moon about it, and I put everything I had into it. So I think it was about 3 months of, you know, working through assets, and, it wasn't just the layout work, that was involved with it. There was also a little bit of game design, which I didn't know was going to be a part of that project. And it just sort of happened, you know, as a necessity, because, you know, it's Adventures League. So if, you know, you're playing with 10 other tables, you have to figure out a way for all of it to work cohesively for every table, and make it easy for the person who is running all of it. So it took a little bit of time and like just trying to figure out how this, because that was my first time ever doing that. So, you know, I would create a draft and like show it to Todd, like, does this make sense? and you know, we eventually landed on something and it was a really fun experience. And I just love doing layout work, mainly because I get to admire the artwork in the layout. I just, everything by Nikki Dawes is amazing.
When you're undertaking a project like that, are you trying to purely, obviously, because the book was a existing piece of art and work? God, I lost my words there. The book was pre-existing. Yeah. Are you trying to make a direct copy, like mimic the style? Are you trying to make it similar in vein, but put your own spin on it? What's your overriding goal when you're developing a layout for an adaptive product like you produced?
Yeah, so it's really similar in style. We try to follow all of the same character styles and everything as not to deviate too much from the actual book. It has to feel like the same thing. But because of the sort of content that is in an adaptation, it just has to make sense with what is part of that. So, if it's going through a portion where it's explaining all the different characters that you're going to encounter in this adventure, that artwork has to represent visually what you're going to see. So it's a little different. And I feel like it's pretty intuitive, because after you read through the story, you know, they provide you all the assets and you're just like, oh, this is a bugbear. Okay, let's put a picture of a bugbear here. So, you know, I don't feel like it's really too creative, like outside of what they've already done, because they've already created that template. It's just a matter of layout and making it make sense for anyone who's reading it for the first time.
Okay. What's one thing that TTRPG fans who have seen you in streams or heard you in podcast interviews might be surprised to learn about you?
I played softball when I was a kid. Most people wouldn't think that I was athletic at all, but yeah, I was pretty athletic when I was a kid. And then my dad got me into video games, so I have him to thank for that. I started out playing Super Nintendo, all the basics, but I also really got into Beavis and Butthead game.
Okay.
And then I moved on to WoW. And then once I got tired of that, after 5 to 6 years, I got into first person shooters.
Okay.
I was obsessed with Team Fortress 2. Thousands of hours were logged into that game.
Wow. Okay. Uh-huh.
And then I got into Overwatch and then D&D. And D&D has sort of replaced a lot of video games for me.
What's the last video game that you remember really loving?
Overwatch.
Yeah.
I haven't played it for a while, but that it was so well designed and it was just so addictive.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I heard so much about it, but I never got into it. I've seen people stream it, but it feels like a really nice, not a departure from the first person shooter genre, but just something slightly different enough to make it engaging.
I agree with that. Yeah. I think they did a really good job with that game. And I'm always looking out for new first person shooters, because I do feel like I want to find something new that's not Overwatch because of everything going on with that. Yeah. But I haven't really been able to find anything. So if you see anything, let me know. I did get into Battlefront 2 for a while.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Did you play that?
I didn't. I think my last shooter was Destiny 1.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Destiny 1. And I played it. I probably put 400 hours into it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I heard a lot of good things about that.
It was before the concept of seasons and all sort of all that stuff. It was just like you go in, you killed people, and that was it.
Yeah. Well, that's what I like about first person shooters. I think because I spent so much time with WoW and getting really heavy into lore and like the grind of getting quests done. I guess went for something completely different and opposite. And that's what I liked about it. You can just log in and kill a few people and call it a night.
Yeah. Cause I started playing New World actually. And it's one of those things where like, I'm sure WoW Classic WoW was the same in that, like, the more you do, the more you feel like you have to do. And it's like, there's all these things that you have to do, but there's only so much time.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. It does kind of snowball. Like, okay, I'm going to finish this one quest. Oh God, now I have to do this other thing.
Yeah. Well, Megan, thanks so much for chatting with me tonight. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This has been a fun conversation.
Just because this is the last show for a little while doesn't mean you shouldn't subscribe if you haven't already. It's always enjoyable to chat with you. And remember, if the die is cocked, it doesn't count. I'll chat with you again real soon.